Welcome to Ever Beyond.
Broadcast through the Wolf Spirit Media Network. Please join us in the chat room at wolfspiritmedia.net.
Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond.
Tune in with TalkStream Live, search for Ever Beyond. Also, you can call to listen on 712-432-9588. Selected archives are also available on my YouTube channel, Studio 9 Jam. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Yes, you're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio, Studio 9 Jam indeed. Yes, YouTube. Hello, YouTube. I know you're all going to be watching this and listening to this. It is my greatest honor to welcome dear Andromedan friend and mentor Alex Collier. Good evening, or good morning. Is it what is it for you? It's in the afternoon, isn't it? It's
lovely. How
is it up in Colorado today?
It was a beautiful day, sunshine, and we get a lot of sunshine here, and it's just after four. And it's good. It's good. You know, life is good, and I'm honored to be on Ever Beyond.
Beyond. Yeah, I mean, it gets in your head because you start hearing it. Whenever anybody says beyond, you hear that little echo thing. That's memes for you. That's memes. Right.
So what are we going to talk about today?
I don't know. We could talk about, you know, chickens. We could talk about space chickens. We could talk about space programs. We can talk about anything and everything. But I know we haven't got time for all that. We could talk about 22 races. We could talk about DNA. We can talk about what else? The Lyran Wars. We can talk about the destruction of Maldek. We could talk about how this solar system is being released. You've got such great news.
Do you have any questions that people have been sending that you may have backed up or archived that we have never gotten to?
Archived questions that we've never gotten to.
Okay.
Well, you could. Got them in the archive of my brain, probably. Questions that have never quite been answered. We've done various interviews and extracts. Everything you say is like a golden nugget. You're eminently soundbiteable. People have done it. You've heard a couple of these videos that people have made of you just reading out something and then they add some music to it. I think that's fantastic. I mean, it must be really, probably like seeing your face in a poster on a street wall or something.
Well, you mean wanted in the post office? Something like that?
Yeah, like wanted, dead or alive. there's different ways of feeling wanted.
Well, you know, exactly. That's always nice to be wanted. it's an interesting time. It's very interesting to see the separation of normalcy, whatever that really was, what we thought maybe was normalcy, and absolute lunacy. And it is like there is a polarization of consciousness. And it's very interesting to watch, and it's very easy to see it playing out here in the U.S., obviously because I'm here and, I pay attention to what happens here as much as I can. And of course the media is, oh my God, it appears they've lost their minds completely. But it's interesting. And when you connect it to the spiritual energies that are occurring off-world, in the galaxy, and in the universe as a whole, you know, it begins to make sense as to what's happening. And, you know, it's like one specific way of thinking that was very disempowering to humanity. They have really had their way for a very long time. And now that that's coming to an end, and it's clearly coming to an end, those who have had this power, it's very clear that they're really prima donnas, and they've been prima donnas all this time. They show no class. They show no honor whatsoever. No, they're just kicking, screaming, and crying, and whining, and it's interesting, for the thousands of years that they have enslaved humanity, they're now trying to convince humanity that they're the victims. And I'm just like, oh, my God, I hope nobody's actually buying this.
Well, I mean, when there was something that happened recently that really it sparked my attention, basically, is that certain types of there's one TV station, one called Fox News, which somehow, and I think one of their top executives was arrested or, you know, what's that word, retired. That they've started putting little snippets of disclosure and actual real things. I'm sure you keep an eye on things like that. Have you noticed that Fox has gone bit rogue in terms of the mainstream media's direction?
Yeah, they're definitely blazing their own trail. And but you're right, JP. They are disclosing snippets here and there. You know, but it's very difficult to know. There's no fair. Well, they say fair and balanced on Fox, but I don't know that that's actually true. I know for many of the other networks, there's no such thing as fair and or balanced. It's the narrative, there's the agenda, and that's it. They're not interested in ratings. They're only interested in getting across their specific message. And I think it's interesting that overall the ratings of all of the mainstream media, and I believe this is worldwide, is fallen off quite a bit. And for every percentage point that it's dropped off, the alternative media has picked up a point or two in percentage of viewership. And it's because I think on some level, everyone's beginning to figure out, you know, that we've been hoodwinked for a long, long time. And very few people actually share the perspective that the mainstream media is trying to force feed us, shove down our throats, paint this picture of horrible calamities, and they've completely abused their power. You know, the mainstream media, they really have for quite some time. And, you know, it's interesting, here in the United States, we have the Bill of Rights, and the First Amendment, one of those is the freedom of the press. And it was the original intent that the media would always carry the torch of truth and would do what it had to do to protect the people. Well, that is clearly not the case anymore, at least with the mainstream media. They are marching to a different drum, to whoever owns their corporate stock, to whatever their agenda is, to their advertisers, and whatever their political affiliations are. It's upside down. It really is. I think that's probably the best expression I can give it, is that it just appears like everything's upside down. I mean, here we're dealing with YouTube censoring, YouTube channels, conservative perspectives, extremist perspectives that they no longer, what they have just decided are no longer valid or have no value. And, we were once the champion of free speech. And even here in college campuses in this country, aka Berkeley and others, they actually protest against free speech. And I have to tell you, I never thought I'd see this in my lifetime. It's the craziest thing I could have ever imagined. And you have to ask yourself, what is it that these folks are afraid of? You know, the media, the opponents to free speech, what is it that they're afraid of, that they would go to these extremes?
I think they're afraid of people who have met other people from other perspectives, who have another idea about how things could be. You know, I was saying that, you have these little nuggets, and one of the nuggets that has really embedded itself into almost modern society is Morinet's quote, or was it Bizet, that, why do you have to pay rent on the planet you were born on?
That was Bizet's. Why do you have to pay to live on a planet you were born on?
Exactly.
Yeah. That was Bizet's. I remember that, and I remember being like, oh my God, I had absolutely no comeback for that.
Well,
none whatsoever.
It's a question, and Becky asked the same question as a child. It's why? What is this whole thing? It doesn't make sense. And the more they try to explain it to you, the less it makes sense, because they're talking B. But
well, there's no common sense to it.
Yeah, what was your response at that time? I'm presuming, you've gone from being deeply embedded into the world and somehow being pushed out, through what you know, what you believe, that all of these experiences have kind of moved you away from the mainstream perspective. But did you grow up with a mainstream perspective? You said you were brought up Catholic. Does that mean it was that you just followed all the rules until one day? What was the thing that... What was your waking up moment, Alex? I don't know if you've ever spoken about it. I don't remember hearing you speak about it. But was there one, or was it always?
That's an outstanding question. I think I had one contact when I was 16. I had ones previous to that, but I was 16 and we were living in Pound Ridge, New York at the time. And, I can remember being brought back and put to bed. And as this was occurring, my dad, who was a very late snacker, he used to get up in the middle of the night and go downstairs and have a snack. And then, sit at the table and he would go back up, go to bed. And it was be the middle of the night, but, he always had a lot of things on his mind. But that was just his way. And even if it was just a glass of water or a glass of juice or something. And one particular night, this particular night when this contact had occurred and I was being put back in my room, my dad said he saw a light underneath my door. And I think I've spoken about this, but maybe not given all the details. So he opened the door because he thought maybe I was up reading with a flashlight or something. And he said he saw me being floating in the air just above my bed and being put to bed, and this light. This, light bulb floating around the room. And and it looked right at him. And he says and he told me, he goes, it looked right at me. He goes, and then it just kind of meandered through the window. But I mean through the window. He said it didn't go through an open window, it just went through the window. And he said, I just closed the door, and he goes, I went downstairs. And in the morning, he was up, which was not necessarily customary, because usually I was up first. And he just looked at me, and he goes, hey, sport, sit down. I want to talk to you. And so I sat down and with a glass of orange juice, if I recall, and he asked me some questions. Now, I had tried to approach him about some of this, and Dad seemed to be a little bit more open to it than my mom was before she passed away. My mother wasn't open to any of this at all. But, you know, Dad had seen a lot. He knew a lot. And so he asked me about it, and this was the first time where he actually approached the subject with me. And so we had a really, really good, frank, and probably the most honest conversation about it. I know it troubled him in the sense that, you know, he had grown up a very strict Catholic, the Sacred Heart Church, and went to Sacred Heart Catholic schools. And, you know, he's a very, very strong Catholic, and that's fine. And I remember him looking at me and saying, you know, is there a God? And he was absolutely brutally vulnerable when he said that. And I said, yeah, Dad, there is. There definitely is one. And he goes, well, what do they think? And I told him. And then he asked about Jesus, and I told him what they had said. And he took it in, and he goes, do they ever hurt you? I go, no, they're absolutely my friends. I mean, I feel safer with them than I do anywhere else. And he was cool about it. He would casually, years later, kind of breach the conversation, open the conversation, but then he would kind of back away. When I was in Florida, just before he passed away, I was in Boca Raton visiting them. And there was a huge sighting in Florida. And my stepmother at the time, who I absolutely adored, you know, she just looked at me and she goes, and I didn't know she knew about all of this. She goes, did they follow you here? And I kind of laughed, and my dad stood up from the couch and he goes, she knows everything. I'm like, okay, first I'm hearing about it. And I go, I don't know. I don't know that was them. I don't think it was them. She goes, oh, okay. She goes, well, you know, if they want to come in and have dinner, I'll make them something. She was very sweet about it. And, you know, Dad's like, you know, hun, I don't think they want to eat our food. And no, they wouldn't. but it was at that point where I realized that, you know, my folks were very mainstream. My dad and Arlene, that was my stepmother, they were very mainstream. And it was at that point that I realized that even though I had, you know, I had worked with the government, with the military, I had done a lot of things, mainstream accounting, different types of work, and even held two security clearances at one point, that I was absolutely no longer there. And it was like, it was that moment there was a recognition that I was actually walking a parallel path that was completely off the the mainstream grid, if that explains it to folks. It was like I can clearly look and see what the mainstream is and where it's going, but at the same time, my feelings and my beliefs were not parallel with it. I had a completely different perspective of what the mainstream is and what it had become. And it's not that there's anything wrong with it. It's just that its perspective is incredibly narrow. And I realized that everything that's going on at this point, or at least everything that was going on in my life, had a very significant spiritual connotation to it. And it had absolutely nothing to do with religions. And, you know, JP, when I made the decision to publicly speak, which there are times I still regret, I don't think I was ever more terrified. I think I'd rather have somebody shooting at me than to have to make that type of a decision again. Because it caused a lot of issues for me. I lost a lot of friends, people I truly, deeply cared about. I was ostracized from virtually every circle that I moved in and out of at the time. And I found myself incredibly isolated. And, you know, when you go through stuff like that, it's like, you know, you're in a relationship with someone and all of your friends are their friends. And all of a sudden you make a different decision. And that whole part of your life that you spent years building and working on and investing in is now gone. And they want nothing to do with you because you hold this completely different perspective. And, you know, I realized that was a long time ago. And, you know, today, obviously, a lot more people are open to the idea of life off-world, to the spiritual realities of the soul and the universe being a holograph and quantum physics. There is a lot more data and information that's coming out. And along with that, the belief systems that we have been fed for years and years and years and years no longer hold up to present-day reality. They don't answer the biggest issues that mankind has. It can't even address them. And in fact, when you look at the structured belief systems, they have actually held humanity back from a greater appreciation and a deeper investment in our spiritual selves. And it looks like it was designed to keep us from going there, from discovering genuine self-introspection. Because, you know, that's the only place you're really going to find happiness is on the inside. And, you know, we all have to come to terms with loving ourselves. And, you know, and defining what that really means to ourselves. You know, and that's an individual decision that each of us have to make. You know, is you know, what is love? And, you know, how can I truly love myself and accept myself for who I am? And to know that I'm okay being who I am, that there's nothing wrong with it. I don't need to be a cookie cutter like everybody else, or the same like everybody else, or, you know, be part of a group in order to be accepted. Because, you know, in the end, when you look at the people throughout history that have changed perspectives or have given humanity a different perspective or a way to go, they weren't followers. They were people who left the pack and decided to do it differently in a very different way, and who at some point shared their perspective. And that's both men and women, you know, who have done this. So it's been interesting. It's really been interesting. And, you know, the older I get, the more I wish my dad was around. Because there's a lot of things I didn't share with him because I didn't know that he was ready for it. And I didn't want that relationship. I didn't want to ever do anything that would sever that relationship. You know, I let my dad's curiosity pretty much dictate where the relationship stood. I never sat down and said, okay, here's everything I know. I never did that with him because I honestly didn't think he was ready. He would stick his toe out every once in a while and ask a question here and there, but he would immediately go back to what he thought, what he believed, and how his life was structured, you know, whether you call that mainstream or not. He was very comfortable there, and that was safe for him. Even though at the end it didn't make sense to him and it no longer worked. But, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, we all... You know, we all have a path. We all have a destiny, and you know, our decisions and our choices, they lead us down that path. And you know, I've told this story once or twice before with my Uncle Dick, who lived up in Alaska. He was dying of tuberculosis, and he would have these blackouts just before he died the last couple of weeks. And my Aunt Jean told my sister this story that my Uncle Dick had a blackout, and he was out for about 15 minutes before the paramedics got there. And when they got there and he came to, he had told her that he had gone somewhere to a park where his older sister, my Aunt Connie, who had passed away, and my mother, who had passed away when I was 8, she was hiding behind a tree, that they met him in the park. And they had a very long conversation about the kids and about life, apparently. And my mother told him to tell us that she was very proud of us and the people that we had become, and that she hears when we talk about her or we pray, you know, to her for help or guidance, but it was too hard for her to come back, you know, to visit us in the spirit realm. And my Aunt Jean told my sister that my Uncle Dick, when he came back, he was a completely changed person. That this experience, he was no longer an atheist. You know, he no longer just thought it was all ridiculous horseshit. There was a part of him that had a direct connection and connected to the spiritual significance of the event that he just occurred with my mom and my Aunt Connie. And it was obvious that he knew that it was a real experience, that it was a genuine experience. It wasn't just a dream. And that had a very significant impact on him. And I can honestly tell you that my experiences with Mornane Fesseus have exactly done the same thing to me. And there are others who may be listening to this as well, who have may not actually voiced those same sentiments verbally out loud, but have had significant experiences, whether in the dream state or near-death experiences. And they know that it was real. It wasn't a dream or something else. And there's no way anyone could tell them any differently. They know what they know. And, you know, those are profound experiences. And I think more and more people are having those. I know that there are many, many books written about near-death experiences, specifically with children and soldiers. There's even some with medical doctors, where they're just not the same after the experience. And those are profound, because when you have an experience like that, the frequency of your DNA shifts. It changes. It is not the same. The frequency of your soul is not the same, because you have gone to another realm, an experience, I could say dimension, well, dimension is probably a good word. You've had an experience, and you've brought that experience and that frequency back with you. It changes your environment. It changes the people around you, whether they realize it or not, because you're different. Your frequency is higher. It is more profound. It has more, more direct connection to a source that is, of all things, that it you can't take it away, and no one can take it away. You are forever shifted in those moments. And with that knowledge, you see life here very differently. You can't help it. And because of that, you know, you can't just put your head back into the mainstream like an ostrich would put its head in the sand. You can't do that anymore. It's just not possible. So you're literally forced to cut another trail, you know, in the woods, and walk a different path. And lo and behold, when you do that, especially when you're first starting out and it seems very lonely, what happens is that you start to connect with people of like mind who have had those experiences or similar thereof. And, you know, you build new family, new associates, new friends. And you create a soul group where your frequencies are very, very similar. And it's like when you're with the soul group, there's no time. Time just flies. You don't pay attention to it until it's time to go. And it's a very interesting, excuse me, alternative reality, because you seem like it's gone by in a heartbeat, but at the same time, you've gotten so much accomplished in a very short amount of time. It's like being in a time warp.
Do you want to take a moment to clear your throat there, Alex? I know you were doing.
Sorry, I'm just.
Yeah, I know, because yesterday you were doing the webinar. Was it yesterday? No, the day before yesterday, and you were saying, "I'm sorry, I have a cold." So take a moment to get clear, and that's fine.
Anyway, I'm sort of just rambling, I guess.
Well, you know, we were talking about, like, you know, the wake up point. This is why, you know, usually on my shows, you know, I talk to people and say, when did you realize that, oh, what the heck's going on here, in a nicer way of putting it?
I guess I sort of strayed from that, but I think it was the conversation with my dad where I realized that I was on a completely different path. And he knew it, and he knew it as well. You know, that I wasn't going to follow in his footsteps, and that I was, I moved out relatively young, was on my own, relatively young. And, you know, it was just, you're just called to do something different. And I became very much aware of that at 16. Very much aware of it at 16. And, you know, that conversation with him at the breakfast table that morning, it was it. And, you know, Dad was always the go-to guy for stuff. But I became the go-to guy for a different type of information to him. And, that was a very interesting, unique experience for me.
It must have been, because children are the ones who get the information. But the question that comes to me is that most of the time when we talk about abduction scenarios, it's ancestral. They follow a bloodline and things like that. And you were saying that, you know, certain members of your family group knew stuff. Do you feel, do you know, have you experienced, have they told you, how much of your actual DNA lineage has the Andromedan connection? Because that's usually what happens, and it's often parents and children and children and children who get the abduction or taking treatment, isn't it?
I know a fair piece. I don't think for a minute I know everything about it. On my dad's side of the family, several of his sisters were very spiritually inclined, not religious, but spiritually inclined. And, they were always considered different, different. And on my mom's side of the family, there is a much more richer lineage that goes back to ancient Scotland and Ireland and England and Germany as well. But I don't know an awful lot about that anymore, because no one can find the genealogy that my grandmother did, or if they have it, they haven't shared it with the rest of the family, other than what our grandmother told us when we were growing up, my mom's mom, about that. But apparently it goes very, very far back, and it's very deep, and there were definitely some characters of note, let's just say, in the family lineage, who were movers and shakers and, you know, walked a different path. So, you know, for example, Sir Walter Scott is said to be our great, great, great grandfather. His daughter, Patricia, is great, great, great grandmother. So that's kind of cool. And my grandfather.
So Walter Scott has Andromeda connections, do you think?
Yes.
So, I mean, these are like the impulse, what you call original intent, has a specific flavor, would you say?
Well, let me put it to you this way. When we talk about Andromedan connection, what we're really talking about here, JP, is the soul. All right? Souls will migrate across galaxies or the universe. And from what I've been told by Theseus, they move in soul groups. At least that's how he presented it to me. A collective of soul groups that enjoy being and working together in different incarnations and in different bodies. What's the word he used? Life forms to collectively evolve. And many of these soul groups, their sole purpose is not only to work together, which they in fact do, go to specific life forms or evolving planets, and they will incarnate together to do what they can to evolve that specific race and or life form. And along with that that statement of intent is their individual needs to explore specific scenarios in their own private life, such as, you know, coming in as a man, coming in as a woman, bearing childbirth, being a soldier, dying in the war, being a physician, being a musician and writing music, being a teacher, all of these things, those are separate agendas that each member of the soul group will have. But he said what he said, and this is true even in fifth density, these soul groups tend to move together and work together through lifetime after lifetime and in different galaxies and solar systems. And this works because they all help each other and support each other in their individual needs to explore their own personal selves and to gather as much data and information of their own explorations. But also, in working with the soul group, they would trust members of that soul group to help them get these lessons that they realize in most cases that whatever happens to them that they may perceive as harmful or terrible, that the agenda was something that they both agreed upon. Now, metaphysics on this planet has sort of touched around about that. And, you know, sometimes it's very hard to remember that and to wrap your head around why someone could do something so dastardly and you actually wanted them to do it. But, you know, Morinet, it's interesting, Morinet had a different perspective on that. His opinion was, yes, what Visayas had shared with you is true, but he said there's also the element of randomness that does occur, especially in heavily populated planets. So not everything is scripted. And, when you look at things that are happening today on the planet, a lot of this doesn't look scripted. If it did, you might feel better about it, because then you know that there's an obvious conclusion, beneficial conclusion. I don't know. I'm seeing an awful lot of randomness in people's behavior and how they lash out and their anger towards others and not wanting to take responsibility for their actions. And, you know, not wanting to be self-empowered. I see a lot of people wanting to remain in a place of victimhood, which, of course, will disempower you in a heartbeat and keep you disempowered as long as you consider yourself a victim. So, anyway,
we're talking about your particular waking up and the waking up that everybody else in the world is doing. And sometimes waking up is also getting in touch with those parts of us, and I can speak from very personal experience, those parts of us that have not been addressed for maybe some lifetimes, but that are still stuck in their emotional quality, like ghosts, stuck in places are being returned to us, still as angry as they were when the day they died, who were we, you know, who was us, and are very frustrated to be unresolved. So I think this waking up period is going to have to, there's a lot of resolution that has to happen. And that's the thing that's going to hurt people.
I would agree with that. I mean, and I think we've talked about this during the webinar, the last webinar and the one before. There are a lot of people that can't look forward for whatever reason. They just can't. So, you know, they have to look backwards to find out why it is that they can't see forward. And it's usually because they have unresolved issues. And, you know, I don't know why it's easier for some people than for others to find those parts of ourselves that need work or need forgiveness or need healing. Or just need perspective. But it is what it is. And, you know, it all comes back down to simply, can one love themselves? You know, no matter what, can one love oneself? And I think if the answer is yes, then you can more easily forgive or put into perspective parts of ourselves that we may not even knew existed, or decisions we made, whether it's this life or another, you know, that were made in stress or strife or in anger or fear. You know, there's all kinds of different scenarios that would cause us to have a completely different perspective of the situation as it really was. And most of the time, we don't actually accurately perceive what the situation really is. We allow the thoughts and feelings of other people to cloud our vision and to cloud our personalities as to what really is, what the situation really is. And, you know, we respond, and that's all conditioning. But if we can get to a place like right now, make the decision within ourselves and say, you know what, and you know, I've had to do this. I've made lots of mistakes. Where you just get to a place and, you know, You know you're doing the best you can, and you love yourself. No matter what happens, you just simply love yourself. And it's in those times, it's being in that place where I'm able to let go of all that other stuff. And you know, JP, when I let go of that older stuff, that stuff in the past or in past lives, it changes my present almost immediately. I see a shift in relationships. I see a shift in my life. I see a shift in my happiness. I see shifts in my joy. I see shifts in appreciation and in gratitude. It's almost immediately, because now I'm not dragging an anchor of something I don't understand or even remember with me, because I realize that it's really not important that I know every single thing. What's important is that I know that I love myself and I forgive myself for whatever mistakes I've made. And there is a maturity, a spiritual maturity that comes with that decision. It's like the moment becomes so much deeper and richer, more colorful. You see and understand more on an emotional and spiritual level that simply cannot be put into words. It just cannot be put into words. When you get to that place where you just, you know, no matter what, you love yourself. Because if we don't believe in ourselves, who's going to believe in us? You know, if you're not going to honor you, who's going to honor you? Because what's on the inside projects on the outside. If you truly honor yourself, the relationships you build, you will expand that. People will see that. They will feel it. They will witness it on some level. And they will, in turn, treat you with that respect and honor as well. If you love yourself, what happens is you have, you draw to you very sincere and deep feeling and spiritually mature people to you. Because you're at a very different frequency than most of humanity. And I think most of humanity wants to get there. They just don't know what it is. They don't know how to say it. Maybe they just don't believe it's possible. There's a lot of different scenarios. But nonetheless, I think that ultimately that's the goal where we all want to go to. Because, you know, Phaseas once said, all the broken pieces always come home. Meaning they always go back to the isness. And that's profound. That's profound. It doesn't matter how long. It doesn't matter how broken. Everything always returns to source. And, you know, there's something profoundly comforting in that. At least I think so.
It's, it's a bit like people in Scotland, you know, or like the salmon. People in Scotland, they go all over the planet, maybe even all over the solar system, but they always come home. And the homing instinct of the soul, you could put it that way. I'd like to... Go ahead.
It's got a profound GPS, the soul. It's got a GPS system that is clearly multidimensional and clearly knows where home is. It's just, are you ready to go home or do you want to continue to explore and, play some more, I think. And, I know for myself, I'm enjoying playing, experiencing different things. I don't think I'm ready to go back to 11th density, just yet. I'm not.
Do you think we might find it a bit boring? Do you know what I mean?
I do. I actually do. I think that's a walk in the park that once you've done it, it's almost always the same. there's a lot to be said for the texture of living life in physicality on different dimensions. To hear, to smell, to taste, to experience, to explore, not only new realms, but, also ourselves. It's a profound experience, and I think if we were taught this as children, to not fear this type of thing, and to know that this is what it's really all about, I think we would have a far more spiritual, mature civilization than we do. I believe that in the ancient past, maybe 50, 100, 200,000 years ago, we had a very mature spiritual civilization. I do. I think that much of this was known and it was shared, and there was an intention to take humanity to the highest levels. And then something happened big time, and humanity got jacked and taken in a completely different direction, And now where we're at is a place where we all know that what we have now is not working. And you know, we're all deeply searching for something that's different, something that will work. We're asking those real, genuine, hard questions. And of course, the most important one is, who am I really? This can't be, you know, I'm here to pay taxes and to, all of my efforts are here to feed a corporation or a government. This can't be what it is. And everybody, and those people asking those questions are absolutely right. This isn't what it was ever meant to be. So it's interesting. And, you know, there's amazing young people being born today that, you know, they know a lot more than they're saying. They really, really do. And because we haven't created a space where it's safe enough for them to actually come forward and talk about things, without being, ridiculed and put on medications and psychotropic drugs. You know, it's a sad situation, but, I do see it turning around. I really do. Cause in fact, it is turning around. A lot of things are coming to light. Especially when the agenda and the intention was to enslave, control, and manipulate. We're all getting pretty hip to that, you know? And that's a good thing. That's the first thing. That type of exposure is a very, very good thing for everyone to understand and to recognize. Because at that point, people start taking more control of their own thoughts and their own actions. And they question, whatever authorities tell them. And, you know, I was always raised that that was a good thing. You always question. You don't be disrespectful, but you question. And, you know, ultimately, you have to blaze your own trail, whatever that is.
We all have our way. So,
exactly.
We're at the top of the hour, Alex. So, now you, when I called you earlier, you said you were listening to some jazz, and so this is the song that you were listening to earlier. This is called Maxine by Paul Hardcastle, not Paul Newcastle, Paul Hardcastle. So, cool. Welcome back to Ever Beyond with Alex Collier this evening, in his car in Colorado, and, yeah, so, you know, and again, you know, we talked about things in the break. We're talking about the IRS and Federal Reserve. So, you had experience inside and outside, and you know, it's. I don't know if you want to talk about it, but you know, is what was the kind of what were the people like? What were they like to you when you had interactions with them? Was it right that you were part of it at some point?
Are we referring to the IRS?
Yeah.
Or
there was something about
that,
that happened.
Well, most of the people that I worked with at that time, they're really good people. What happens is the system, the way it is structured, is they pitch you against humanity. It's us against them. And they codify all of their actions and all of their reasons for doing things in such a way that you're supposed to punish taxpayers, no matter what. And as long as they pay, and here we come back to, you know, why do you have to pay to live on a planet you were born on? As long as you pay, you're okay. But if something happens, and it doesn't matter what it is, and you fall behind, and you're now a debtor, you're somehow, therefore, much less a person or have much less respect or value than someone who isn't in trouble. And your entire perspective of humanity becomes codified based on whether they owe taxes or they don't. And it's tough. I had a very, very hard time with it. Because, you know, you go in and you're supposed to seize a business, supposed to put all these people out of work. And most of the time I would do what I could to give them back the business because they have no ability to pay unless they're in business. And, you know, if you take everything away from them, now they have nothing to work with. And it doesn't make any sense to me, and it never did, to take everything. For example, you know, put in jail, how can they make amends? You know, if they're there, they can't do anything. There's no resolution to the events that happened. They can't make it right because now that they're in jail and they come out, now they're, in many cases, homeless. They have nothing. Now they're living on a street. And somehow that's going to help. You know? The system is just, it's ludicrous. And it never should have allowed to get to this point. And I'm not even going to go into the legality of it. But you know, you sort of see this, you see this all over the world, especially when you talk about the central bank, financing cabal system. Countries get so far into debt that, the central bank systems, the international bankers who own corporations then go into these countries. And in order to get the money back, that they've, literally stolen from these countries, they start taking the natural resources of these countries. And what happens is now the country's completely destitute. And then what do? They create wars. And they start thinning out the population because, you know, they have no value. It's just insanity that we as a people on this planet even allow this kind of shit to go on. That we have bought into this kind of a system. But I think, you know, the people that I worked with at the time, when we all started out, we all had the best of intentions. But it's a mindset, and they take you down this path that if you want to be here, this is what you have to do. This is who you have to become. You have to check your humanity at the door. And there are some people who can do that. And then there are some people who can't do that. And, you know, it's a very, very interesting thing to see. And to experience. It really is. And you find out your mettle. You know, you do. You find out your mettle, in those kind of situations. You find out where you clearly stand, which side you're on, because you are, in fact, picking a side. You really are. You can justify it any way you want, but you are choosing a side. You're choosing a corporate identity over civilization, humanity. So, and the reason we're talking about this, folks, is during the break, when you guys were listening to jazz, we were talking about Sean David Morton. And, you know, I know what he's going through. It's tough. It's really, really tough. And, but, you know, even though I haven't talked to Sean in a long, long time, I know that he's working on himself, and he will come out of this a much stronger man and a more purposeful leader. You know, he'll have some clear intentions about what he's going to do. And because, you know, Sean, you know, bottom line, and again, we all make mistakes, and I don't know exactly what his were, but, you know, his core, he's a really solid, good person. The Sean I knew would take the shirt off his back and give it to you. So I have nothing but great respect, and he's by far one of the best speakers I've ever heard. Funny as a whip, you know. He could make the devil laugh. He really could, if there were a devil. And you know, just a good guy. In fact, he introduced me to my first wife. He did, and you know, that's you know, something
that's a story
that,
for a round table one, you know, day maybe.
Well, I'll always be dear to him for that, and I will always be dear to him for that, because out of that came three incredible kids and a lot of learning experiences, and a love that's very difficult to measure. So, you remember those things, and that's what you should remember, are those things, and the things that happen that bring you to where you are today and the person you are today, all of the good and all of the hard and sometimes all of the heartbreak, all those things, you know, at some point lead you to where you are and who you are today. And, you know, that person can be an incredible person. And, you know, someone that can make a huge contribution to people's lives, sometimes on a grand scale, sometimes on a small scale. And, you know, the lives that we affect and that we touch, I mean, you just never know, you know, how it helps someone. There have been many people when I was down and out and sleeping in a car or sleeping under a bridge, you know, that helped me. You know, there were many times I didn't want to be here, and someone just had a kind word, a smile, gave me $5 and said, "Why don't you go get something to eat?" when I didn't ask for it. And, you know, I'm here because of those moments. It's the little things that we do for people that we often overlook. And Sean was one of those guys, you know. He did a lot of little things for a lot of people. And I there are a lot of people like that, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. No matter what big mistakes they might make, anyway,
so from, by the way, I'm going to be, I'll send you what I'm reading out. I'll send you by email, but tomorrow, at this time I will be, on Revolution Radio, and I'll be reading out a letter from Sean's experiences in, Camp Cupcake, as they call it.
Club Fed. Yeah, Club Fed. Okay.
And he's also, you know, as you say, he's going to come back more focused. He's also going to come back at least 60 pounds lighter. He's lost 60 pounds in weight. That's a lot. Yeah,
yeah,
almost,
yeah,
as much as a person.
Yeah, well, the food sucks. It do. The food sucks. Oh my God, I had lost a lot of weight with my personal experience as well, so I came out dodging raindrops.
Yeah. So, but bodily functions aside, another old friend of ours has asked a question, so I'd like to address this. This is from Rebecca, Dame Rebecca Jernigan. Can you speak to the idea of being more than one reality at a time? It happens to me almost all the time, and sometimes there's a third reality that is also present. And can you speak to that?
Well, I can speak to it. That's a great question, Rebecca. Thank you, and I hope you're recovering well from your trials and tribulations. Here's how I can address this. And in order to address this, I have to make this intensely personal. Obviously there's a part of me that's here in third density because I'm talking to you guys. And there's another part of me, from what I understand, is Patal, that's 11th density. I can't even imagine what that is, so I don't even go there. Because I just simply cannot put that into any kind of perspective. But let's just talk about my relationship with the A's. I could very easily see myself there. And it wouldn't surprise me if there's a portion of me that is, in fact, there. I have reasons for saying that. Because there was a moment when I was on the mothership where I saw someone, we looked at each other, and God, JP, this is the first time I'm ever saying this out loud to anybody. I was looking at myself. That's the only thing I can tell you, is that I was looking at myself. And I knew it. I knew I was looking at myself. When I approached this with them, he immediately changed the subject and he said, at some point we will address that. Or you two will address that. And so I've been sitting with that in the back of my mind for all these years. Now, can I explain it, how I can be in two places at once? My conscious mind has a hard time wrapping my head around it. My subconscious doesn't understand it at all and tells me I'm nuts. But I don't listen to that part of me much anymore. My subconscious part, I mean. But if you were to ask me, on a belief, on a level of belief and a level of knowing, what percentage of me believes that I am, in fact, in two or more places at once, two or more realities at once, I would have to say it's clearly in the upper 90%. The only percentage of less than 100 that I have is the fact that I never really got time to address that particular being, and spend any time with him. But all I can tell you, and I say this unequivocally, I looked at this man, this Andromedan man, and I was looking at myself. I don't know how to explain it. Is it a future self? Is it a past self? Is it a present time self? I don't exactly know, because I know the A's come from the future. But nonetheless, if you look at the idea that time is just a construct that we create in order to make sense of events, then the reality is there is no time. And therefore, I am, in fact, in two places or three places at once. And you probably are as well, every one of you listening to this. And that's an interesting thing to wrap your head around. It really is.
It is, because it's like one of these stories where a guy goes back in time to give his previous self a book that he wrote in the future, that he then copies out and makes it a book that he publishes to create the book that he sent back in the future. Like, where did it really come from? That's, you know, but it's in, you know, I so here's, you know, so the thought is,
keep going. Okay, I just wanted to add this. This man that I saw, he appeared to be a young man, compared to my physiology, present time. I mean, for all I know, he was 1,000 years old. I don't know. He was somewhere between 6'6", 6'7", but he was a young man, very physically fit, very strong, obviously. And, you know, it was interesting. And it's still interesting. It's still interesting. I do a lot of dreaming work where I travel. I fly at night. And when I'm allowed to leave Earth's gravity, I'm almost never allowed to leave the solar system because there's a lot going on out there. I'm always brought back gingerly, lovingly brought back and said, no, you can't go there. It's not safe. You know, I search for an answer to that. Am I living multiple lifetimes in multiple spaces? Because when you're out of your body, your soul can travel anywhere. You just have to know where you're going. And that's the trick. You know, there's no table that says, okay, where do you want to go? Here's a map. Here's how you get there. You fly through this black hole. You bounce off that star. You enter this wormhole and you make a right at the Starbucks and you're there. You know, there's nothing like that. That's not how the universe is structured. You know, there's no tourist stations where you can go in and ask questions like that. But it's interesting, it is. And, you know, sometimes I go there, but it's very difficult for me, as much as I have experience, to actually wrap my head around it. So, you know, if I am there in the future, I have to believe that this particular lifetime, I am successful in whatever it was that I chose to do. Whatever my intention was to become a contactee, to be a contactee, to experience all of it and to share it and to personally grow from it, you know, how I resolve it within myself is that, okay, in the future I'm there, so I must have been successful here. That's where I go with it, because I don't know what else to do with it, frankly. And Emma's not going to discuss it with me. I could just as easily find out more about JP than I can about myself. And that's the way it's always been. You know, I'm so sick of hearing, well, it's your life. You need to make those choices.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's all I get. You know, and you know, when you get it from a fifth density being, you just throw your hands up in frustration. Like, shit. You know,
come on,
the last thing you want to hear. Yeah, exactly. You know, throw me a bone, anything here. I don't get a lot of bones, but I understand the purpose for it. I really do. I don't like it, you know, I hate taking the long way home. I much prefer the shortcut. But that's just not what it is. So,
yeah, I'd rather take a taxi, but, you know.
Or Uber, whatever. you know, but this is just what it is. So I have to deal with it. Oh, goodness.
So
I've never talked about this stuff before.
Thank you,
live.
Thank you. this is stuff that a lot of other people are going to be experiencing, if not now, soon, as they begin.
I hope so.
Their mentorship, because this is something you've been speaking about for a long time. Mentorship. How's it going? Have Moroney and have you met any others than Moroney now? I mean, you know, you had Visayas and Moroney, and now...
I've met his crew, but my interaction with them is not on a personal level like it was with Moroney and Visayas. Visayas obviously has crossed over, and, you know, I loved Visayas. He was, you know, clearly one of a kind, and even the A's thought so. But he was old, and I think for all of his wisdom and his knowledge, I think towards the end, this was, I think, mentoring those of us here on Earth, whoever the other three are, I think that was the last thing on his bucket list. Because, you know, he could be short at times. Grumpy, and not an asshole, but he could be grumpy. He expected you to get something the first time, and you know, that's just not really possible. You know, not here on Earth, and you know, it was obvious he had never spent any time here on Earth because he would have known that. You know, I value every moment that I had with him. Moroney is a very different personality. I think he gets it. He clearly gets it. And, you know, he's a family man. He has a family. Well, he's raising his own family and the family of his brother, who apparently was killed during a science expedition. He's also raising... his brother's children. You know, when he's not here at, you know, helping me hack through the weeds, you know, here on Earth. So, I'm incredibly grateful for his time. But there is actually several benevolent bases. How do I put this? There are benevolent ships and beings from several different races now based on the planet. And let me tell you something. That is spectacular news. And I'm not shitting you. That is spectacular news, because they have a foothold. It's solid. They're not going anywhere. And the bad guys, the regressives, they're shitting all over themselves because their time is up. And they had an opportunity to leave. They chose not to. So they're not getting out of here unscathed in any way, shape, or form. They're not going to some other unevolved planet. They're not going to another vulnerable solar system to screw with anybody else. It's over for them. And I couldn't be happier about that. But the mentoring, I think on a lot of levels, it's already begun. I think it's already begun with our space fleet. At least with two of the three space fleets. We have three space fleets. The Cabal space fleet, the Rogue Group, you know, that's there's a lot of CIA involved in that group. And they're rogue. They're rogue. And hopefully they will turn things around, but they're rogue. Those that are more connected to military, very serious military people, they get it. And, you know, they understand that they've made a choice to serve humanity as opposed to have humanity be their slaves. They're not into that. They're here to serve humanity. They have already begun the mentoring. And which is why we're finding out more and more about the space fleet. They have to bring humanity on board. Because if they have the support of humanity, consciously, spiritually, we flip this thing in a heartbeat. We can flip this into a positive. And it doesn't have to be a conflict. There's way too many conflicts on the planet already. And they're bullshit conflicts. They're not real. It's just a manipulation, deceit, and lies and mind control that is just sickening the consciousness of people. When, you know, at the core, we, of all people, we really all want the same thing. We want to live free. We want a clean environment. We want to raise our kids safely. And we want to be able to support ourselves and our family. And to experience joy, happiness, and good health. That's really what everybody wants. Okay? It's just when you infuse politics and religion, it gets all twisted, and it goes absolutely sideways. But those latter things, politics and religions, you know, the deceptions, they're all coming out. They're all being exposed. It may not be happening as fast as we want, but from what I understand, we have made leaps and bounds in the last 15 years. And that things are moving very, very quickly. And humanity is waking up at a staggering rate. It may not seem like it, but we are. Those of us here in the United States, we don't really know because, you know, we have to deal with our media. And, God, that's a nightmare. But, you know, when we can see past the media, when we can see through all the cast the lies and the deceit, you know, we know people who 10 years ago were bricks, and now they're not. You know, now they're awake and they're asking all the right questions, or they are past that stage, and now they're talking to other people about things that 10 years ago they looked at you like you were crazy. And we all know people like that. So it's all good. It's all good. And it's unfolding, I guess, the way it was meant to or supposed to. But there's no going back. There really is no going back. This is going to occur. The enlightenment of humanity is going to occur. It is occurring. The freedom of humanity is going to come about soon. We just need to be mentored in the idea of what it means to truly be free. What to be free, on a galactic definition, on a standard that other star nations use as a standard of being free, we're going to have to be educated in that because we don't know that. Procedures, codes of behavior, we have a lot of things that we need to be brought up to speed on because we don't know. We don't know what is acceptable off the planet. We don't even know what's truly acceptable here on Earth because we've been fighting with each other, you know, forever. Not that we wanted to, but we've been conditioned, you know, with racial prejudice, any kind of prejudice, sexual suppression, I mean, you could just, you can go anywhere and you see issues of divisiveness and division. And, you know, we have to get past that, and we will. We will. But first, we got to get rid. First, the negative influences, the regressive behavior, those who are at the top of it, they need to be removed. And that is, in fact, happening. And they're not going to rest until it's done. Let me tell you that. Because the shit that they've done here, they have done in many other places in our galaxy. And it's over for them. They are never going to do this anywhere else. Because they have laid waste to civilizations and have scarred evolving civilizations all across the galaxy for their own pleasure. And it's over. They're done. So this is just playing itself out here. I don't have a timeline, but it's soon. The fact that not only we have boots on the ground, but now we have strategic bases for benevolence to operate from, folks, that's a good thing. That is only a good thing. It really, really is. And, you know, I'm encouraged. I'm incredibly encouraged. And, you know, I'm so hopeful about it that, you know, I don't give a shit if anybody calls me a nutjob, cracker, kook. It doesn't matter to me anymore, you know, because this is the deal. This is really the deal. And if those of you who you've taken those steps to, you know, you intuitively can feel that there's been a shift of energy. And I mean, you just watch how the governments and the media and the banking consortiums, the pharmaceutical companies, just look at how they're behaving. They're tyrants, and they're showing their behavior. They're not even trying to hide it anymore. That should tell you everything, that the fact that they're not even hiding anymore and they're coming out in the open means that they're being flushed out. And that should tell you everything, that they're no longer in control because they're being flushed out. And flushed out means everybody can see what's up with them. And it's all good. It's all good. We just have to play this out. And that's not to say there are not going to be some bumps or some ouches or oohs. There might be.
Keep your fingers out of the window.
Real surprises. Yeah, exactly. But it's all part of the process. And, you know, our civilization, our humanity will, this will never happen to us again. The lessons we get here that we teach future generations, they will not forget. And the lessons, the mentoring that is to come will teach our humanity to never fall into this type of trap again, or to allow anyone to seduce us or suppress us into a position of helplessness and hopelessness ever again. So it's all good. It's all good. It's been painful to watch and painful to experience. But we're going to be good. We're going to be really, really good. We have a lot to contribute to the galaxy, to other star nations. We do. There are things we know, things that we do, just our music alone. You know, the recording contracts that some of our guys can get in other star systems would be amazing. But, you know, there's
some people
I
wish would, they can go and get their recording contracts on Alpha Centauri.
So, you know, we have a lot to teach, and we have value, and they see it, and I think they want to share what that value is with us to, you know, help us appreciate what our value is, because many of them have been where we are still. They've been there, and they got through it with assistance and help. They got through it. And, you know, So there is a reckoning. There is a acknowledgement of our experience that, you know, that they share a perspective with. So it's going to be good. You know, Star Trek is coming. Well, Star Trek's already here, but that type of life where we're interacting with other worlds and other star nations, that's coming. It is. It absolutely is coming. Have no doubt about it. As far as the underground facilities on Earth, both regressive and positive, that's already a reality. They're already interacting with other star nations. But the general population is not, and that's what I mean by it's coming. Okay?
So, Alex, we've got a few questions popping up in the chat room.
Okay. Cool.
And we have a couple who have met in the chat here, you know, aside from myself and Becky here. But
I love the Q&A. Please do.
Yeah. So, this is from Fedita? Federico. What can you say about beings from Cygnus B? Do you have? You say you've seen them. What do they look like?
I saw two, and that's where I was told they were from. One of them was wearing a suit. And inside the suit, there was physical structure. And I was told that they were primarily helium. Their physicality had a very high concentration of helium, what we would call helium. And in order to be in the physical space where they were with on Mornay's craft, this one had to wear a suit. The suit was of a color I've never seen before. I couldn't even begin to describe it. But it had texture, and it had a very depth of color to it. It had insignia on it I cannot explain, nor could I even begin to recognize. This particular being in the suit was somewhere in the 8 to 9 foot range. And when this, I don't even know the gender, if he even had a gender. I don't know what that was. But when it moved, it slid its feet. It didn't actually lift its legs. It slid very easily, almost as if it could float, in this suit. Next to it was another being that also I could not tell of a gender, but it didn't wear a suit. But it had a feminine sense to it. Or I could say that my first perception was that it was feminine in nature. And it was almost ghost-like. And I was told that it was plasmic, that particular type of being was plasmic. Now, the being that was plasmic lived on a star or within a star in Cygnus. The other being that had the suit, they lived inside of a planet. They were Hyperborean, and they only wore the suit when they left their world. That's all I know about them. That's all I know.
Wow, an incredibly different physicality and reality to them.
Completely different than anything that I, you know, there was that one time that Mornay and Theseus were talking, or I should say Mornay's crew was talking to a sixth density or several sixth density beings. There was one specifically in the forefront. And they were observing my interaction with Mornay and Theseus. And I was aware of it, and I didn't know what to do. And the whole time that this was occurring, I saw myself keep looking at this being because I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what to expect. And I would hear Mornay say to me over and over again, telepathically, calm down. It's okay. They're just here observing. They're not here for you. They're just here to observe. And I'm like, okay, because first thought was, am I in trouble or something? And he just kind of chuckled, and he smiled. He didn't chuckle. He smiled at me, and he just said telepathically, it's okay. And then he engaged me and Viseus in a conversation, which took my attention away from this being. Now, I couldn't see the being when I looked straight at him. He just wasn't there. Even though the space that he filled was open, I could not see him. And that's because my mind simply could not comprehend this type of being. However, when I was looking at Viseus or Mornay from my peripheral, at a very specific angle, I could see what looked like his physicality, at least the front of his physicality. And it appeared to be a male of sorts, very angular looking being. Sharp features, but other than that, everybody else that I've seen were either A's or twice I saw P's at a great distance when they were on the mothership, but they didn't interact with me at all. They looked, and there was an acknowledgement of the fact that I was there, but there was no interaction at all in any way. Other than that, almost everyone that I met was an A, you know, light blue or very, very pale white, varying of ages. I enjoyed the children immensely. I had a wonderful experience with them over a Jerry Rafferty song that I had on a tape recorder that was in my backpack, which they had to put on a piece of, it was like a piece of glass, and they played it, and, you know, the children were like, wow, what is that? And it was, to my knowledge, the only piece of music they heard.